Welcome to There's an Elephant in Your Office. I'm Ashley.
And I'm Andrea.
And together, we're advancing the conversation about mental health in the workplace.
Welcome to episode 3 of our podcast, There's an Elephant in Your Office. As a reminder, this podcast is based off our book by the same name and explores mental health conditions in the workplace. We use a herd of elephants as a metaphor for employees experiencing a mental illness to help you understand it better.
That's right. And they have amazing names like amazing mammoths, invisible elephants, and rampaging pachyderms. All three of our elephants could appear at work, and each group has specific needs, characteristics, and knowing how to identify and support them is going to be the key to meeting goals personally, professionally, financially, and for the business.
And obviously, it's not that easy to do, or we wouldn't need to write a book about it and talk about it on a podcast.
That's right. So, it's hard.
We're going to dig in. And last time we talked about the first group, the Amazing Mammoths. And as a reminder, those are employees who have great difficulty coping with those external stressors. So today we're going to move on and talk about the invisible elephants.
That's right. Invisible elephants are employees with a mental illness who are high functioning enough to hold a job. I kind of think of them as the Goldilocks of mental health. They're too sick to pretend that, oh, I'll be better tomorrow, but they're not sick enough to leave the workforce. And we kind of got into this whole podcast book situation because I'm an invisible elephant and trying to manage my anxiety disorder with work expectations, throw in a little bit of changing your medications, and it just got really, really hard. And that's how you ended up with elephants. I'm really not sure how it worked out with elephants, but it did. And here we are.
Well, elephants are cute and fierce and maybe not always understood. So
with very long memories. We remember everything.
NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, says the majority of employed people who experience a mental health disorder in a given year have either anxiety, depression, bipolar disorder, eating disorder, obsessive compulsive disorder, or PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. So that means from 8 to 5 each day, they are managing a mental illness and all of the work expectations that come with their job.
That's right. Because when you clock in for work in the morning, your anxiety doesn't magically disappear. You have to figure out how to be successful at work and still manage your illness. That's why, in my personal opinion, being an invisible elephant is so difficult. There's still so much stigma that comes with it. And you're afraid to say something. You're nervous to tell people that you struggle with things, but sometimes it's pretty obvious you're struggling and an explanation really would help the situation.
Well, you know, it's interesting because as intuitive as it seems that of course you can't just turn your mental disorder or, you know, your stress and worry from your personal life off when you get to work, that's actually kind of a new idea in the workforce because for many, many generations, it was such a divide of work is work and home is home, and you just don't worry about that. But now, since we've talked a little bit about, you know, the cell phones and then never really having a strict line, I think it makes it even harder to separate. And, you know, the people that are these invisible elephants are stuck in the gray zone.
That's right.
The elephant color.
And they are invisible because I worked with people for nearly a decade. And they had no clue that I had, you know, a diagnosed mental illness and I see a therapist and I take medication and all of these things that are true that help me function. I saw them every single day. It never came up. So when I was kind of putting all this together, I was picturing myself in the office environment being kind of invisible in the actual office. And this little phrase came to mind, and it was cubicle camouflage. So we're going to hashtag it.
Yeah,
hashtag the heck out of that thing. So that's kind of how we're describing these people at work.
So I love the term cubicle camouflage because in my work as an HR professional, it comes up all the time. I mean, I can't tell you how many times in one day I pass someone that I know something about that no one else knows or at least should know. That could be a performance issue all the way to a personal situation or some type of mental or physical illness that they're battling. And there's no reason that people would know. And a lot of times people shouldn't know, you know, depending on HIPAA and how much somebody wants to share. So, you know, I've had plenty of employees who've been battling bipolar or OCD, and to everyone else, they look normal. But to me, you know, I know what they're dealing with. And so I will be able to, you know, give them different support or, you know, help them with their time off or their leave situation. But it's completely under the radar because they don't want that stigma, or they just don't know how to talk about it, and they don't want people to react negatively.
That's right. And one of the things that we're trying to encourage with all of this elephant talk is, no, you don't have to spill your guts and tell everyone your entire life story. But we've got to start talking about mental health, emotional health, and the issues that we all face so that it becomes more normalized. At that point, having small conversations like, hey, I'm really just exhausted. My brain hurts. You know what? I need a mental health day. And your coworkers or your boss will say, yeah, okay, that's good. I took one last week. Boom, normal.
Yeah. And those types of conversations, I do feel like are becoming more and more normal, not in every organization or even every department, but I have heard more of those phrases and keywords, I'd say, in the past year than I ever have.
And we released our book about a year ago. Surely that's not.
Oh my gosh. I hope it's us. I hope we are helping the conversation, which is the whole
goal. That's right. It's totally us, right? No one else is doing this.
Right.
When the other part, kind of from a personal perspective, is helping to teach people what to notice. So we call it warning signs or signs of a recurrence. And so your HR people who know all your secrets, who are helping you, perhaps a trusted friend or coworker, depending on who your boss is, maybe a boss that you trust, things that they would want to look for in you are things like an inability to carry out your daily activities. You can't handle any problems. I call it, I have no chill left. You are on my nerves. You did nothing, and I can't even deal with you. It is irritability. It's anger, mood changes, problems concentrating, and problems really communicating. Now, it's going to be different, of course, for every person. But I know when my anxiety flares up really bad, I want to isolate. I absolutely do not want to talk on the phone. If you call me, I will not answer. I will not answer for my husband. I will not answer for my mother. And that tells me, uh-oh.
I've heard about that.
Yeah, you probably have heard about
that. I'm just teasing. But I think an important thing is to note that those are warning signs, but it's going to be those are a significant or noticeable change from that person's usual behavior. So it maybe wouldn't send a flag if the person who never wants to talk on the phone still doesn't pick up the phone. But if you're noticing that somebody who you usually, you know, can get in touch with or you have a good rapport with, all of a sudden for the past day or few days or week is doing something really different, that might be your cue to ask a question or to offer support or just to find out more information.
Right, because usually it's a steady decline and less of a cliff dive when your mental health starts to deteriorate just a little bit. And so it is that sustained change over time. And while I am not a man, I do know from reading and researching that in men, a lot of times when their mental health declines and they're starting to struggle, they seem really angry and really irritable and just mad at everybody. And you're like, dude, what is your problem? Well, they don't want to talk about it, of course, but it's usually a mental health.
The next question, of course, then is what do we do if you are managing someone that you either know, have a strong belief, or, you know, somehow find out that is this invisible elephant? You definitely don't want to be like, hey, I heard you might have a mental health condition. Let me call you out.
Yep.
And make it really yeah, public.
Let's not ever, ever do that. Have I mentioned that we don't like surprises? I think we're going to talk about that in a second. But yeah, don't call us out on that, please.
No, the worst thing you could ever do if you're someone's manager or HR person or leader is to say, hey, come in here into my office and just shut the door. I want to talk to you.
I'm fired and I'm probably going to cry. That's my first thought.
Well, and you're not going to hear anything because your defense mechanisms, your panic mechanisms, your flight or fight, all of it is activated at that time.
Yeah, all over the closing of a door. Isn't that funny?
I know, but it's, you know, if you do need to have those type of conversations, always preface it with, hey, this isn't about you. I want your opinion, or I wanted to follow up on that thing I told you we were going to talk about already. Yeah, let's not do the surprises.
My husband calls it a buffer. So he knows that before we have some big change in plans or something that I think is going to happen will be different, he's like, okay, listen, I'm going to give you a buffer. XYZ is not going to happen the way you think it is. And in 20 minutes, we're going to have to divert to a new plan. And so then I can freak out for a few minutes, get myself situated, and then go on like nothing happened. I need that buffer.
Yeah. And my guess is that if you are managing a team, you are going to learn and pick up on who needs how much of a buffer. Who really doesn't care and can roll with it last minute, and who does need a little bit more time to process. It becomes pretty evident as you work across teams.
Yeah, because not everybody who is depressed looks like Mopey McMoperson and just sad and head on the desk. You know, it can look like a lot of different things. So you got to pay attention to your people.
Yeah, and knowing how to work with each individual goes a long way in every management style, and this is definitely no exception. But there are a few other things that you can do if you believe someone does have a mental illness that they're struggling with. And the two biggest keys are, we talked about, no surprises, and also consistency. So work may be the most stable person in a most stable place in a person's life. And so the more you can have routine expectations, schedules, and give people notice when there's going to be a change, the better off they're able to overall handle those things.
Right, because that's less fear, less anxiety over what's going to happen next. I can actually focus on work if I know that I'm going to meet with my boss every Wednesday at 2 o'clock to go through the same agenda that we go through every week. I've just freed up so much of my brain instead of, what are we going to talk about? Am I fired? Did I mess up? What does she want to say?
Right. And that makes sense. And also, not everybody's wired that way. So for some managers, that may seem boring or mundane, and they think they need to spice it up, right? Maybe they think, well, I don't want to bore this person by doing the same thing every single week. So I'm going to throw a wild card in there, or leave the agenda open, or change the location. So again, know your people. That may work for some and probably definitely not going to work
for other people. Yes, know your people.
Yeah. And the other thing I always like to remind my managers is that clear is kind and unclear is unkind.
Oh, I like that.
And that's just, yeah, I mean, that's just really true for almost everything, but especially for those who are struggling with anxiety, OCD, depression, PTSD, anything where they could be easily triggered or kind of veer off their good mental health, being clear is one of the kindest things you can do.
And right now we're all trying to be extra kind because the world is a little nuts. And so I like that. Maybe, I don't know that we can hashtag that one, but we can use it. Clear is kind. Nice.
Yeah, it's simple. And also just having empathy. I know one lesson I learned personally a long time ago, I'll call myself out a little bit, is, you know, I have very high expectations for my work and I tend to work very quickly. And so once I started getting staff in my early management days, I had to learn the hard way that just because I can turn out a product in a certain amount of time, I can't just assume someone else is going to do that. I have to use my words and tell them when I expect it to be done and ask if that's reasonable, because not everybody works at the same pace or in the same style. And you can't just assume that because it's the way you like something done, that that's how it's going to be.
Yeah, we're not mind. Yeah, we're not mind readers. And it goes both ways. Employee to the manager, manager back to the employee. Be clear, be specific. That way people know the expectations. And again, this is my personal opinion, but I think most people want to do the right thing. They want to do what is expected. They want to do a good job. If they didn't, they wouldn't keep showing up every day to work. They would do something else. So give them a little benefit of the doubt and give them those expectations. And then you can kind of figure out, you know, if they're too much or not enough or just right.
Exactly. And, you know, sometimes we even think, oh, well, we have a plan, but that is a month out. So I'm not going to bog people down to let them know that we might shift in a month or this new thing is coming in a month. And I would challenge you to start giving those heads up and just say, hey, as a notice to everybody, no action right now, but just so we all know, we're going to do this in a month. And some people will promptly ignore that. And other people will really appreciate the time to work that into their flow. And so they can, like you said, Ashley, not spend more time worrying about what's coming, but just check it off and then adjust.
Yeah. And I think a tool that's also helpful that people often overlook is a checklist. I know that seems really silly, but it also clears your mind because you can look at your checklist 47,000 times in one day and not bother anybody. You can look at it. What do I need to do? Did I mark it off? Is it good? Is it not? Okay. What's left? And that's a tool of reassurance. And I know that's very helpful for me. And a lot of people are list makers. So give them a list. Let them check it off. I mean, little success every time you mark something off. It feels good.
It feels so good to mark things off. And I've even had friends that say that they will, at the end of the day, mark off everything on their to-do list, cross it out, and then write a new list with anything that was left over just so they could mark it all out.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say that you add a couple things just to mark them off. Yeah.
I mean, why not? You know, don't limit yourself.
Oh, I like it a lot.
Yeah, I mean, one caution I will say, and, you know, there are many examples we could go into, but the way I tend to see this play out for managers is they either go way too deep because they either have a personal connection or they really want to help and they feel vigilant about being a supportive person, and they go so far in that it's really quite over the line, or they do the opposite and back so far out that they don't want to say or do anything wrong because this is tricky stuff. They don't want to upset them or out them
or get sued or do something that HR will be mad at.
Exactly. So then they do nothing and they pretend like everything is fine. They're like everyone else. They don't need anything different and life will just continue however the manager sees the world. And that doesn't work either. And so you really have to, and we're going to keep saying it again and again, but you really do have to get to know, at least at a base level, your staff. And, you know, how do they operate and what do they need? And you will be such a more effective manager, and that person will be more productive and have more loyalty and respect for the organization if they feel supported.
That's right. And that's where we try to, you know, tell businesses that, yeah, mental health is important to the financial bottom line because you need people to work here and do your business or make your widgets. And if I, as an employee, feel like you support me and you give me what I need to be successful, you are also successful. So it's a win-win. Why do you want to make people, you know, not help your business by not helping them?
Well, I think one thing that I've done in some of my workshops that's been interesting is to just ask people to pause and reflect on what we're saying. I mean, we're giving you a lot of information, but what is your reaction to it? Are you not buying it? Like, these are excuses people make up who just don't want to work. People should be stronger and snap out of it. or, you know, some of the other things that you tend to hear when the topic of mental health comes up, in that, in the stigmatized
which
category.
Is why invisible elephants have been invisible for decades and millennia.
Exactly. And, you know, is that your gut reaction? Just notice that. Or perhaps you have a personal experience that you can resonate with either in your workplace or at home. I mean, so you get it, and that's where you're coming from. Or maybe you don't know what to think, but hey, you're listening to a podcast about
it. So now you know.
You care enough.
Yeah, now you know.
Yeah, and you care enough to learn. So I think it's important as we go through all the elephants and topics is just to always do that initial gut check and say, where am I coming from? Because then you can build on it to be more well-rounded in how you approach
it. Yeah, because you can't be at the two extremes. You are not their therapist. You do not need to be all up in their drama, helping them sort out, you know, their feelings about this relationship or whatever's going on. But you also can't be icy cold, or I guarantee you that employee will never tell you if they need help. And that also gets into some really scary situations, but that's another topic for another podcast.
Right. And as their manager, or let's say you're not their manager, but as a trusted person that they work with day in and day out, you know, you want to be someone that they can talk to, or at least give information and resources if you're in a position to do that. So walking that line is possible, and that's what we're here to help.
I was going to say, is there anyone in the business setting that is trained to help managers manage employees in these situations? Who could a manager talk to?
Who would help the human?
I don't know. It's like they're our best resource. Who could possibly help them?
I know. Well, again, it's interesting because in the last, I don't know, 5 years, I've seen a really big shift in how the human resource department is being perceived in the organization. So, you know, for many, many years, it was payroll benefits and practically the principal's office.
Yeah.
Hire, fire, get in trouble. And that has really shifted in the past 5 years and is going to continue to shift. And so if you've had a good experience with an HR person, you get it. If you haven't had a good experience with HR, or you've had no experience with HR, it is a little bit more intimidating to take such a vulnerable topic to them. But if you build that relationship and you try it, you know, hopefully it goes well. If it doesn't, try it
right
again.
And that's
because they do have the impact.
Yeah, and that's part of our whole quest to get people to normalize talking about mental and emotional health at work, is it makes those conversations easier to have and they don't seem like such big deals. One thing we haven't mentioned is employee assistance programs and other, I guess, products or programs that businesses have to help people who are struggling with their mental health. And I think that's a really great thing for the managers to know that they have and how to use it, and then find a way that all their employees know exactly how to use it and communicate it to them. Because, you know, some of us need it.
Right. And definitely it's published somewhere on your intranet or in your benefits packet you got when you were hired or annual enrollment. But do you know the number? I mean, it would be very easy to find it or ask your HR person for it and then print it out or put it, you know, somewhere that you can find it. It's easy. It's visible. So if anyone asks or if they need it, you don't have to go dig for it at that moment. You're prepared.
Right.
Versus having to do that legwork, you know,
put it in the break room, put it on the back of a stall door in the bathroom, if that's, you know, someplace that works for you, but have it where people know where to find it quickly and how to use it. And, you know, one thing people say, and maybe this is a tangent for another time, but they worry about using an employer's EAP because they think then their boss knows everything. So maybe from HR's perspective, will you explain EAP and how y'all really don't know anything? It really is safe.
Sure. Yeah. So the employee assistance program, it goes by different names, but almost every company has one. And it truly is anonymous. We get a bill that shows how many people used what services so we can pay for them, but it does not give us a list of who saw what or engaged what services. And your company's paying for it. And it's very underutilized. So we're thrilled when we get the bill and we're like, oh my gosh, somebody, you know, used the EAP service. Somebody got a will made. Somebody got those discount, you know, tickets or whatever. There's a million things on the EAP, but nobody is seeing your information and what services, because it also applies to members of your household in almost all cases. So it's not just you, even if it was your name, that doesn't even mean it was you who used it. And we don't get that information.
Yeah, anyway. It could be the person who carries the insurance for the whole family just happens to be
right
the name on there. But yeah, I know people get a little worried about, you know, well, if I go to EAP, then everybody will know my business and my, you know, boss can hold it against me. And officially,
yeah, I get that.
That's not true.
Right. And I completely understand the nervousness around it, but there's so many laws about health protection and data privacy that it's not something you need to worry about. Even though I get why people
don't. And that's where, again, my opinion, if the information is out there and the department directors and the vice presidents talk about it enough, hey, we have this really great program. We really encourage you to use it. It's here for you. That's why we have it. Here's the number. Here's a picture of Susan. She's going to answer the phone and help you. You know, make it where it's just the same as getting the daily menu for the cafeteria. You know, it's not any different than talking about that. I think we've got to get to that place if we're going to see a real evolution in people using the EAP as much as, I guess, the workplace wants you to use it.
Yeah, and all of those top-down efforts are important for visibility, but also just making it a part of your team meetings, even once a month, highlighting something or talking about a different topic that maybe you could throw it out to your team or work with your HR person on ideas, but keeping total wellness as part of your, not just your organization's focus, but your actual team and department's focus, like maybe setting aside 5 minutes. Hey, did anybody do anything really cool for their mental or physical health this month that you want to share? I mean,
it is. And something I've heard you talk about also is those leaders setting an example. So, you know, if you want people to take mental health days or use their vacation time, you know, to make those boundaries around work and life, if the boss does it, then the employees think it's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. It reduces the stigma a little bit each time somebody takes a mental health day or takes a break or says, hey, you know, I'm going to come back to that tomorrow. I need to shift gears. Or how, whatever phrasing makes you feel comfortable, but then it gives people permission to do that same thing and not feel like, oh, they're going to think I'm not working hard enough or I can't handle the job, which is not true. Maybe you can handle it even better after you have a day off or a half day or
whatever. And then on the opposite end, bosses, directors, vice presidents, whoever, you know, is in charge, if they're sending you emails at 11:30 at night, and then another one at 6:15 in the morning. And then you walk in and they're like, hey, why haven't you answered my messages yet? That's sending the total opposite message. And already just talking about that just makes me tense up everywhere. And I can tell you, when I switched to a part-time role, one of the things that happened was I couldn't have the company email on my cell phone anymore. That is probably the single most amazing thing that's ever happened to me. When that got off my phone and all those notifications went away, I felt such relief. It really was freeing in this odd way because I felt so much pressure to check and reply and reply and reply. And you do that every day for years and years and add it to your brain's predisposition to be anxious, you set yourself up for some pretty difficult times. So I think, you know, we've got to get our managers in the middle, you know, where they're modeling good behavior.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting because I think it helps create that boundary like there used to be between work and home. And so not everybody can turn their work phone email off, but could you turn the pop-up notifications off? I mean, it's been shown in studies that if you turn the email notifications off while you're working on your email, it frees up so much more bandwidth in your brain because your attention isn't being drawn over to that notice. And so I turned my pop-up notifications off, my just regular work email, a year ago, and I don't think I'll ever go back to having them back on. It's so distracting.
Squirrel, every 10 seconds.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you can turn your work email off or separate it so that you have to actively go into it or turn off your notifications, or that's just an idea.
Agree
as well.
On rules. You know, if it says, okay, this is our department and we agree that after 6 p.m., we're not expecting anyone to reply.
But boundaries
are hard. But if we all do it and we all make the rules together, we're more likely to follow them.
Yeah. And, you know, I think even if it's not email, because email is easier to ignore than a text or an IM or a Slack direct message or, you know, however you're instant messaging each other, that can be more so distracting because it feels way more instant than an email.
And it feels like you have to get back to them more quickly. And you can see how for your anxious people, that's just a big snowball downhill to them not feeling good or productive. Okay. So I'm really aware that we have talked mainly about office work, and not everybody works in an office, but there are ways that you can also support mental health with your employees in different scenarios. And so emergency medical services, your EMS, fire, police, ambulance workers, there's a whole lot of emotional hazards to their jobs. And they have an industry best practice where they're supposed to create a peer support network. So firemen, police officers, they're going to support each other when there are major incidents or crises or what have you, because no one from the outside is going to understand the complex emotion of what you just experienced more than a brother or sister in that same field. And so I have seen I told you I work in healthcare. So I have seen that be so beneficial for some of the officers who are involved in just really, I mean, everything from house fires, automobile accidents to, domestic violence, whatever it may be, having that peer support has made a world of difference for them. So you and I work kind of in that office setting, but don't think that it is limited to just that basic, relationship, 9-to-5 workday kind of thing.
Yeah, if anything, those peer networks are probably way more bonded and have to lean on each other because nobody else can truly understand what they're going through and what self-care or taking care of their mental health looks like, because that is definitely not the norm and some very traumatic things. So I'm really glad they have those.
Yeah, and invisible elephants can drive an ambulance just the same as they could be, you know, the CEO of a manufacturing business. You don't know where we are. We're invisible. That's the whole point.
Cubicle camouflage. Maybe there's we got to expand it.
Yeah, because you're not in a cubicle if you work outdoors Well, hey, listeners, if you come up with something really catchy, let us know. Cubicle camouflage without the cubicles. Yeah.
Dare I say camouflage?
Just plain old camouflage? Well, that's not very creative. Dang it.
No, it isn't. It is.
So thanks for listening to us today as we talk about elephants and specifically invisible elephants. And as a reminder, invisible elephants are people like me. You have a diagnosed mental health disorder, condition, illness, but you are high functioning enough that you hold a job and you go to work on some consistent basis. And we benefit from routines and structure, and we're scared that people are going to figure out that, you know, we struggle sometimes and they're going to call us out and we don't know what to do about that. And if you're one of those invisible elephants like me, you know, elephant solidarity, people, there's so many more of us than you even realize. We talk about 1 in 5 U.S. adults experiences a mental illness in any given year. Yeah, they're in the workplace with you. We're going to have to come up with some kind of like secret handshake so we know each other when we see each other. But I just want to kind of admit to everybody that it's hard trying to manage your mental illness and your work expectations and your life day in, day out. Sometimes it just seems like you're not going to make it. But you will. You have HR people there who can help you find some accommodations. You may have a peer support network to help you find the support that you need. Or you may use external resources like the EAP program or a really good therapist. And even though you're concealed in the workplace, just remember you are doing your best to be a good employee. And even on your toughest days, you're still there, you're still contributing, and it still counts. So on behalf of the invisible elephants in your office, why don't you take what you've learned today and help educate some of your friends and coworkers about yourself, about your condition, and what it's like for you in the office? Because if we never tell people what it's like for us, how can we possibly expect them to understand and make it better? So to close out today, I just want to remind you that we're addressing the elephant in the office in every episode of these podcasts to help not just the 1 in 5 U.S. adults experiencing a mental illness, but the 5 in 5 who have mental health. That's the rest of you. Like you, Andrea.
Yes, I am one of the 5 in 5, and we appreciate you listening. Please like, star, follow, and share. It really helps an independent podcast like ours make it out into the world so we can help make it better for everybody. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next time.